Varicosity Vein Center, providing vein treatment relief for vein disease, spider veins, and varicose veins for over 20 years. Their team of doctors and vein specialists deliver techniques and care for residents in Jackson, Madison, Ridgeland, and Central Mississippi. Information and appointment scheduling at varicosityveincenter.com.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. To hear previous shows, visit mpbonline.org or download the MPB Public Radio app to listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand.
Southern Remedy Healthy and Fit provides information on how you can lead a healthy lifestyle. I'm the host, Josie Bidwell. Search for and subscribe to Southern Remedy on any podcasting app to not miss any episode.
Good morning, and ain't it a great morning outside? If you like living in a furnace, a hot, humid, steamy jungle type, Java, it doesn't even get this hot in real jungles.
Yeah, but we got a little bit of a relief the past couple of days. It's funny how, you know, 105 degree temperatures will make you really, really appreciate 85 degrees.
Yeah, well, don't look at the weather. I think it's supposed to get on back up there. Anyway, this is getting serious, you know. And as a gardener, it's really tough on some of my plants. And I grow, you know, I've sort of prided myself on choosing plants that can take the weather, whether it's winter freezes or summer drought or heat or hot summer nights or whatever. I try to choose and stick with plants that can take that. But man, mine are suffering right now. As a gardener, instead of wringing my hands, I'm just going to pick up and see what takes it and move on. If I have some plants that can't take this, I just don't know if I need them. I might give another shot, but as that saying goes, it's try again, but after that, you're just being a fool. So I'm going to stick with what I can as best I can. But right now, you know, I feel bad for people having to pay a lot of water bills for taking care of plants that are suffering so terribly.
But dare I ask, Felder, what's the temperature where you are?
You might not want to know, but it's supposed to get up to 67 today.
Get up to? Oh, come on now.
Yeah. Right now, I think it's 64, 65. It's supposed to get up to 67. But you know what? At the same time, they can't grow sweet potatoes in England. They can't grow tomatoes out in the open. They have to have – everybody's got these little greenhouses – because tomatoes won't grow outside in the regular sun and air. It's not cool enough. So, you know, I have a lot of people say, well, you know, you're in England, you go to Europe, you go to Japan, go to all the different places. I also grow the tropics, and I spend a lot of time on a little tropical places where on the east side or the west side, it's either wet or dry, depending on where the prevailing winds comes up. So even in tropics, they have deserts, hot, dry deserts. So you can't just really peg stuff. So we try to keep it as local as possible, not what's going on in, you know, Barbados or Tokyo or England, but what's going on in Mississippi, Tennessee, Alabama, Louisiana, Arkansas, because that's where we are in the here and now. And that's what MPB does. Java, you know, it's just a wonderful opportunity to talk to real people in real time about what's going on in their gardens. So anyway, it's a call-in program, folks. I'm not going to be all doom and gloom. We're dealing with the situation as it is and how we expect it might be. And if there's some things I can help you with to share with you that I'm trying to do, not always successfully, but we'll talk about it. I'm a retired extension horticulture agent, and I'm not going to try to sell anything, but here's what, based on my experience, which is extensive, my training and my observations, what would cause me to tell my own son, or if my mother, she'll still garden. Let's start out. Let's go on up close to Memphis, all the way to the top of Mississippi, the South Haven. Good morning, Rebecca. Thank you for calling. How you doing?
Good morning, Felder. I've got two or three questions, so I'll try to keep them pretty short here.
Okay.
I heard kale is a perennial, and I've got some that I planted in the spring that's still alive, and I'm like, is it a perennial? Will it make it on and on?
Well, it botanically it's a perennial. It's just like peppers are a perennial, but peppers will freeze outside, you know, unless you're on the Gulf Coast or something. But kale is a perennial. It's a short-lived perennial, though. I've got one that's probably, I'm going to say it's a year and a half old. I planted it, almost 2 years ago. And it goes great through the summertime. It flowers in the spring. And it just sort of sits there over the summer. Well, so what I do with mine is in the late spring and the summer, I cut mine back and it bushes out. And if it makes it over the summer, it'll do fine. But that could be a long-lived perennial like a canna or a daylily.
Okay. The other plant I wanted to ask you about, and I grew two of them this summer, and they lasted like 6 weeks or 8 weeks. And I saw them in Colorado, which is a totally different world. And seems like the hummingbirds prefer fuchsia to petunias. I mean, petunias do real well, but I tried to grow fuchsia, and they just, you know, they lasted 6 weeks, and that's that.
A couple of things. Petunias, also like fuchsias, don't really like hot weather. Petunias sort of shut down when it gets hot. A lot of them actually die. Some of the modern hybrids can take it, and some of the old-fashioned kind. But petunias actually are native to the Andes, up in high, cooler elevations. Fuchsia is native to places that stays cool all the time. So, and hummingbirds, neither one is native to where hummingbirds are from. Anyway, bottom line is fuchsias, which grow great on the West Coast, they grow great in Colorado, grow great up in New England. I'd love to see one that's more than 4 or 5 months old in the Deep South. I've tried myself. There is a fuchsia, fairly new in the soil, as a bedding plant. It's not the big, pretty hanging basket type, but it's kind of a red one that does okay. I forget the name of it. I'll report on that in just a little while. But in general, the hanging basket type fuchsias that are all over England, fuchsias 8 feet tall on my street in Lancashire, 8 feet tall. They can't take the hot, humid nighttime temperature. They need to cool down at night, and that's what gets them in the South. Not the high daytime, but the hot nights where they can't cool off. So fuchsias are a no-go in the South.
So probably need to just go for salvia or something that makes it, if I'm for the hummingbirds, do something like that.
There's so many wonderful plants that hummingbirds love, including really hardy perennials like the perennial blue salvias. They're just really great hummingbird plants. We also have a plant that's native to Mexico and Texas. A lot of people call it Turk's turban or Turk's cap. It's a type of mallow with red flowers. Hummingbirds just tear those up. And 4 o'clocks, there's all sorts of plants that hummingbirds do great on. Fuchsias simply won't take it in the South, with rare exceptions.
Okay. Now, my last one, and I don't know if anybody's ever asked you this because it's almost not a gardening question, but when I let the weeds get away from me and I'm pulling weeds for like 30 minutes or more, you know, doing this, the next day my hamstrings are sore. I was like, I'm wondering if anybody has come up with a gardening and exercise combination stuff, you know, muscle benefits for working in the garden.
Actually, it's real, real interesting because I've seen charts that show the different things we do in the garden normally, from mowing grass to stooping over to planting to dragon hoses to bending over. If you go online, you'll find several things that have charts that show different exercises that we normally do in the garden. We really do. There's some good ones. But, you know, problem is we only do those things maybe every week or two at the most. And exercise mm-hmm. means you need to get those muscles ready for it. So I don't know if there's an exercise designed to get ready for weeding, but I can sure use it myself. But that's a good question. And there are studies and there's some really cool charts online about that.
Okay, well, I'll look it up then. I knew you'd know if it's out there.
I've seen them, and some of them are quite funny. Okay, appreciate
it,
Rebecca. Great. Good to hear from you.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay, now let's slide all the way down to the Gulf Coast to Long Beach. Lee, how are you this morning? What's up?
I'm good. I'm just kind of freaking because you probably are aware how dry and hot it's been down here. I haven't had any rain since July 28th. And yeah. I've been watering like crazy. And I've been watering all my shrubs and all my beds, but it didn't occur to me to water my sycamore tree that overnight has lost almost all its leaves. I'm thinking it's dying.
Well, it could be, but let me throw out a couple of other things. First of all, we've been through droughts like this before. It wasn't that long ago. Maybe, I want to say, 8 or 10 years ago, it was so dry for so long that we were losing pine trees and magnolia trees, and it killed a lot of dogwoods in our woods. So this isn't the first time, but here's the deal. If your tree drops its leaves, believe it or not, that's a good sign. It's when they turn brown and stick that the plant is dead. So the fact that it's shedding its leaves just says it's under a lot of stress. And by the way, it could have been caused by something else. It may have actually been struck by a mild bolt of lightning that ran down the outer, on the outside of the bark. It was raining or something. So there's no telling what, but if the leaves shed, that's it's bad, but it's not dead, if that makes sense. The symptom is when a shrub or tree dies, it turns brown, the leaves typically stick on it.
Okay, so, cool. Well, then I'm going to water. I've been watering it, thinking if it's because it's dried out, I don't know about the lightning. I hadn't seen anything like that.
Well, that's just, almost anything that stresses the plant can cause it to shed its leaves, and even a big tree.
Okay.
Here's the thing, though, and don't water all the time. If you're going to water, let's say you're going to water 3 times a week, it's for the lawn or for shrubs or trees, that's too often. If you water really good, maybe 2 or 3 times an hour apart to push the water down deep, then the plant can go a whole lot longer than if you try to keep it wet all the time and just keep the shallow roots moist. So water good and deep 2 or 3 times and then take it from there. But don't automatically just turn the sprinkles on all the time. That really is a mistake from the plant's point of view.
Okay. Thank you. I feel so much better. I really appreciate it.
Good luck. Appreciate you.
Thanks.
Okay. This is tough. And Java, before we go to the next call, let me mention this. For the first time in probably, 10 or 15 years, I actually have somebody coming over to my garden every week to make sure that my potted plants get watered. I've never done this before, but it's so bad that I'm having people come by and check on my plants, and I pride myself on never watering. But this is a serious deal. So anyway, let's slide back to the central Mississippi, to Jackson. Hubert, how are you this morning?
Good. Phil, I have an oriental persimmon tree in my backyard, and it is sitting up sprouts all over my backyard. Can I safely spray those sprouts with Roundup and not harm the main tree?
If they're coming up from seedlings, it's not a problem. If they're sprouting off the roots, Roundup goes into plants and goes down and kills the roots. If they're suckers off of the roots of the main plant, it's going to kill the main plant. Same thing with crape myrtles.
Is there another spray that I could use to kill those suckers?
Nope. The suckers are part of the tree, and anything that'll kill part of the tree can kill the whole tree. So if they're actually come up, dig around, dig one or two of them up, and if they're growing off of existing bigger roots, they're part of the tree, and whatever you spray on them is going to kill the whole tree. It's just one of those weird things. Same thing with wisteria and with crape myrtles. If they're connected to the tree, it's going to kill the roots of the whole tree. Sorry.
So just keep cutting them down, huh?
That's about it. It's sort of like shaving, you just sort of make your mind up. Every time little hairs grow back, you just cut them off.
Okay, Phil. Thanks for the advice.
I wish I had something easier to say. We'd like to mention that what I'm sort of interested in, Java, you may know somebody who can do this. Our theme song is exactly 30 seconds long, and I'm curious if there's anybody out there who plays a quirky musical instrument that would like to give a go doing our theme song, the song that you're hearing right now. Be fun to hear it on a tuba, or a xylophone or something like that. If any of you musically inclined, send us an email. Let's see if we can come up with some really fun versions of the Gestalt Gardener. We'll send you the tune, 30-second clip, and take it from there. Okie dokie, folks. Horticulture fell to rushing, and here in the studios in Jackson, Mississippi, broadcast from towers all over Mississippi, we welcome folks from all over the state, Louisiana, Arkansas, Tennessee, Alabama, and also folks who tune in during podcasts. Meanwhile, let's head down to Natchez, Mississippi, right on the river, and talk with Francis. Francis, how you doing?
Hey, Felda. Thanks for having me on.
I bought
two fig old palms about 12 years ago in St. Bernard Parish in New Orleans. And I brought them up here to Natchez, and I planted them in my yard. And when I first planted them, the foliage came out really, really good. And about 2 or 3 years ago, some graveyard grasshoppers got in the one. And the foliage on one hasn't been the same since. What can I do?
Well, you know, it's a really strange thing because, you know, they put on two or sometimes three flushes of fronds or leaves, whatever you want to call them, a year. And usually, unless they actually chew on some of the buds, the plant should have outgrown that by now. So really about all I can suggest would be give them just a little bit of fertilizer, you know, any kind of good, garden-type fertilizer, just a little bit, and water them really good and just see, because, you know, there's nothing the grasshoppers will do that won't affect really right leaves on it then, or maybe the buds of leaves coming out after that. So they should have outgrown it by now. So I'm stoked on this one, man.
They have. Wow.
So I don't know.
What fertilizer would you recommend?
I wouldn't use an agriculture or a garden type. You know, I wouldn't use triple 13, anything like that. Any kind of a potted plant food or a flowering plant fluid or vegetable food, you know, any of those kind of things. Just not the straight agriculture type triple 13 stuff. It almost doesn't matter. But sprinkle it up pretty close to it and water it in really, really good. Let's see, because, like I said, the grasshopper shouldn't have affected it more than one or two sets of leaves.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you, fellas.
Okay, wish I could help more, but meanwhile, you know, you might, well, I can't even think of anything else to say. You got me stumped on that one.
Okay. All right.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Francis. Appreciate it. Okay, now let's go up to, looks like we're going up to Memphis. Is that where? Yeah, Helen in Memphis. Hi, Helen. Good morning.
Hi, Felder. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's up?
I'm new to the Mid-South, and never gardened in this wild tropical climate, and I decided to plant watermelons this year, and they're beautiful.
Yeah.
The vines are beautiful. The melons are beautiful. I think I planted them in the middle of May or something, and they look like the kind of watermelons that you get in the grocery store. I planted icebox-sized ones. And but we harvested one a few weeks ago, and it wasn't nearly ready. We can't tell how to know when they're ready.
That's a really good question. It's one of those things old folks used to sit around talking about on the porch all the time. Here's an oddball thing. First of all, usually the seed packet says about how long it is from when you plant the seeds and when you start harvesting. But, you know, if you gently turn one over, it's got a spot on the bottom. When that spot turns from white to yellow, it's maturing. It's it's sort of pale brown, not yellow, but pale brown. And that's probably the best way to tell. That spot changes color from white to kind of a tan yellow type color. And even then, all you can do is guess.
Because we harvested one at the end of July because it just looked perfect. And, of course, it was growing, but it was white inside still. It wasn't anywhere near ready. They take a long time, don't they?
Yeah, well, you know, they're berries. A lot of people don't realize this. You know, it's not it's a fruit on a vegetable plant, but botanically it's a berry. And a lot of it depends on temperatures, moisture, fertilizer, all that kind of stuff. But it takes a certain amount of time. But, again, that spot on the bottom will change to kind of a light brown, kind of yellow color. Most of the time, and that's the closest I can get.
We made the soil real rich, and of course it's been getting tons of water, and they're just beautiful plants, so we're looking forward to harvesting them. We'll probably have 15 watermelons all at once.
Well, you know, you got enough to play around with then. Let us know what you ended up discovering. I'm curious about that. Over the next 2 or 3 weeks, we're going to all learn from what's going on in your garden.
So you think like the end of August, the beginning of September would be the time to start messing with them?
You know, one thing I know between my horticulture science training and my experience as a gardener is I can't answer that. I don't know. And you know what? That's the most honest answer you'll get from anybody on earth.
Well,
let us know.
It's fun experimenting. It's been fun trying them, and they're just beautiful. So we're enjoying the process.
Please let us know, because, you know, you can't believe what a community. The MPB, folks, you're tuning into this, a lot of people never call in, but they're curious, and they pay attention, and they keep track. And I'm curious, too, so let's have some fun with this. Let's laugh about it.
I'll let you know when they're right. I'll let you know.
Okay. Thanks, Helen. Appreciate
it. Bye.
Okay. All righty. We are ping-ponging back across from the Mid-South to the Gulf Coast, back to Mobile. Angie, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How you guys doing?
So far, so good.
That's great. I'm happy to hear that. My pomegranate tree hadn't been doing anything. We got it from someone else. And this year, it put out a lot of pomegranates about 6 weeks ago. And then literally, I went out there one day, and there were like five. But they didn't fall off. I think the squirrels or birds or, I don't know, something ate them because there was nothing on the ground. And I'm wondering, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, my first guess, believe it or not, a lot of people, and nobody wants to even talk about this because it sounds creepy, but squirrels and rats both do that kind of stuff, but they usually take bites out of them. They leave it on the thing. If it's hauled off, I suspect something like a possum. You know, possums can do that. Maybe raccoons. Possums can sure do that. You know, they're looking for moisture and sugar and nutrients, and possums will clean. I mean, they'll clean a muscadine vine overnight. So I'm suspecting you might have something like that.
There are possums and raccoons where I live. And the same thing happened last year with my muscadine vine. It, like, had a bunch, but that wasn't quite ready to eat. And then, like, days later, there was nothing. There were a few on the ground, but, you know, it wasn't equal. Dang. So I was just really wondering, is there enough time for those pomegranates to kind of come back?
Not really. They bloom in the late spring, sometimes early summer, and they're real pretty, kind of an orangey red flower. And then they make fruit just sort of one time. You know, it's not like a fig. A fig is a flower, and figs can produce all the way, you know, up to fall. But these kind of fruit, pomegranate type things, just usually just once a year. Sorry.
Oh, no, because I had anyone doing anything, and this year it was like, okay, and it was just full of them, and they're just gone. None on the ground.
Sounds like a possum to me. I've got a friend who grows a lot of different kinds of fruits, and he has bird netting, and he wraps it all the way around his muscadine vines and fastens them with clothespins so that things can't crawl in or under. So anyway, it's a tough one, but I'm suspecting a possum if it's hauling it off.
Okay, so you're saying get netting and put netting over the tree?
I'm just saying that's what one of my friends does, but he's a real, how do you say, a fruit nut, a nut about fruits. He's a sort of a fanatic guy. Rest of us, we just go with the best we can. You know, you might be able to wrap up an area. Let's say you got a branch that's got seven on it. You might be able to wrap just that part. I'm just grasping at straws here. But I do suspect a possum. I really do.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, and y'all have a good day. Love the show.
Okay, Angie. Thank you. Sorry. Appreciate that. Oh, Java.
You gave her a little.
Me out.
You gave her a little bit of bad news, but I mean, it happens.
You know, I have fencing, dog fencing. I have hog wire. with dog fencing and bird netting around part of my garden to keep the critters out, and it costs more than just buying stuff at the farmer's market would have. But I've got this determination. So part of my garden has got fencing and netting around it, and that's just what it takes sometimes. So, but anyway, we got some calls a lot, but before we do that, can I share a little thing about a stupid thing that nobody asks about? You ready for this?
Let's do it.
You know, and the question I want to ask is, do male wasps sting? But that ain't the question. I'm not talking about honeybees or bumblebees. I'm talking about a generic group of insects that includes red wasps and guinea wasps and yellow jackets and hornets, you know, the kind of bees that wasps that live in colonies with stingers. And they usually have nests of paper and wood. Here's the thing. There's only one queen per colony, and she stays over the winter, lays eggs in spring, a little walnut-sized thing. Those eggs hatch, feeds them. They grow into workers. The nest gets bigger and bigger, sometimes several feet across. But the question is, why are the wasps, yellow jacket, hornets, why are they so aggravating in late October or November? Java, y'all had a birthday party a couple of weeks ago, but I'm telling you, in the late summer and fall, and if you go to a tailgate or have a patio party, the yellow jacket is trying to take crab meat off your cracker. They could be around the rim of your Coca-Cola. You know, have you ever noticed they get really aggressive in the fall?
Yeah, they do. They are downright mean.
Well, here's a reason why, and this is what the Gestalt Gardener MPB is about. It's not, you know, they're not being mean. It's really crazy, but at the end of the summer, the queen in each nest gets tired. She starts to die. She stops laying eggs. She stops giving off the pheromone that gets the workers going out bringing her back food, which is usually caterpillars and spiders. They're the most of meat eaters. What happens is she stops feeding, and she lays off all the workers, and they don't know what to do. They're disoriented. They're starving to death. They're all going to freeze in the wintertime. Wasps all freeze except for the one queen. And so what happens is they're looking for any kind of energy they could get, which is going to be in liquid form because they can't eat solid food. So they're looking for sugary stuff like your Diet Coke or your root beer or your ice cream or a jelly and your peanut butter. So this time of year, those things, instead of being mean, they're hungry. They're miserable. They've been laid off. They're not going to make it. And so I kind of feel sorry for them. What you can do, put your little shallow dish with some jelly or you know, which they can lap up, maybe some sugar water or watermelon rind or anything like that out there to give them something to keep them going as long as can. Feel sorry for them. They're not trying to be mean. They're homeless. They're hungry. They're out of work. So instead of being mean, and by the way, when you swat at them, they give off a pheromone that attracts the rest of them. So swatting at them just makes them mad. So, and by the way, males don't, all those workers are female. Males don't have sting. Is that a stupid thing for us to talk about or what?
So now when we look at the wasps, we need to look for the cardboard sign.
Yeah, that would be their nest. That's what. Anyway, you know, they get really irritated because of the pheromone, and you know, it, again, they're all going to die. You got to almost feel sorry for them, but don't swat at them, because that just. I'm not going to try to get misogynistic here, but the female's got stingers. If you mess with one of them, the rest of them come to her aid. I'm gonna let it go with that.
Well, let's go back to the phone phones, Felder. We got Bill and Jackson gonna save us.
Good call. Thank you, Bill, for calling. I'm starting to get off the rails there. What's up, Bill?
I have a question. I'm in Jackson. Do you have experience with evergreen witch hazel distillium
in our area? I don't myself. I've heard reports from Gary Botman has talked about that before. He just recently retired at Extension Horticulturist. I've seen it, but I don't have any experience. I don't know how well it takes either our sudden hard freeze in the winter or a hot summer night. So I understand it's supposed to be a good plant, but I don't think it's been around quite long enough for it. I don't know enough about it to know. But I tell you what, okay. if you'll stick with us, I'm going to do a real quick search because I got something, a note about it someplace, either Gary Bachman or Carol Reese from up in Tennessee. Somebody said it's a great plant, Felder. I just don't remember.
Great. Thank you.
Okay, hey, is there a particular one that you're looking at? Because some cultivars may do better than others.
I've read that Cinnamon Girl is the most cold hardy. They
okay.
seem to like the hot and humid, but the hard freeze is difficult.
That's what in the back of my mind. That seems to be an issue, and it's not so much the freeze; it's the sudden freeze after a week and a half or 2 weeks of real mild weather. I think it's the sudden freeze that confuses them so much. But anyway, I'll do a little bit more research. You know, I can come up with.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Okay, Bill. Okay, thanks for. I do not mind not knowing something because it gives us folks a chance to learn something. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Okay, let's go. Okay, let's go to Louisiana now. Peg, how are you today?
Oh, I'm good, Felder. And I'm very interested in having my husband perform the theme song on the kalimba. So you let us know about that, okay?
Okay, what need to do is, and Java and I hadn't had a chance to talk this out, but if you could email me, I can send you a 30-second recording of our tune so he knows, you know, what it is, and it's got to be right at 30 seconds. So, yeah, shoot us email me. Just go to felderrushing.blog, and it has a
button
that says email me. So now what you got?
Okay, just that I've been wanting to ask you if you know, I've never seen a bug do this, but I have these plants that have almost perfectly round holes, mostly at the edges of the leaves. Doesn't seem to kill the plant.
Yeah, I even know what it is. I know what it is. Me. I know.
Please tell me.
Well, it could be one of two things. There is both a wasp and an ant, and they're called leaf cutters. And they get around the edge and they chew almost a perfect. If you look at it under a microscope, you can see the little bite marks, but little round things. It's either usually an ant, but a lot of times it's an ant, but usually there's a bee. It's called a leaf cutter bee or leaf cutter ant. Google it. And it's kind of a neat thing. It doesn't really hurt the plant.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to. But I've never seen it happen. So are they night creatures?
No, the ants might be at night, but the little wasp things are during the day. I don't remember if it's a wasp or a bee, but I would say it's a wasp. But there's little bitty things. You wouldn't even notice it because you're not going to notice it until that last little bite and they fly off with it.
Well, it was just a mystery that I thought maybe you knew. So
I do. Thank you. I needed bailing out.
Well, good. And I can hear my husband practicing already. We know the tune, but to keep it 30 seconds, we'll send you an email and ask you for the clip.
Let's have some fun with this. I mean, come on. This, you know, it's gardening, but we're just trying to have a little fun. It's kind of a good MPB makes it kind of like a community.
Yes, and we love it when you play cheesy music. It's like his favorite part of the show. So.
Good. Well, thank you so much. And I'd be curious if you ever find one of those little bees at work and send me a picture. I've never seen one. I just know what it is.
Yeah, me neither. But now I'm going to be on the lookout.
Yeah.
Okay.
All righty. Well, let us know.
All right. Thanks, Felder.
All righty. And by the way, Java, while we're on the phone, I did a little bit more research on this distillium, the plant that's called distillium. Winter hazel is what it's called, and apparently it is more of a tropical, subtropical, Gulf Coast type thing. And the one called Cinnamon Girl is supposed to be able to grow up into as far north as Zone 6, which is up like St. Louis. Supposedly, I just don't know myself. So I'd be glad to find out anybody who's ever grown the plant called Distillium. Particularly one called Cinnamon Girl. I'll do a little research during the week and report back next week. Meanwhile, can we slide up to Tennessee and talk with Al?
Let's do it.
Hey, Al, thank you for holding, man. What's going on?
Good morning. We have we just moved to Murfreesboro last fall, and the winter, it killed two fig trees that was in the yard, and they started coming back. I cut the tree down, and it started coming back. Will it produce fruit this year?
It can. But here's the deal. Figs, by the way, figs are not fruits. They're flowers. A lot of people don't realize it. If you cut one open, look inside, it's an inside-out flower. Uh-huh. And where they get pollinated, there's a little insect that crawls in that hole in the bottom, goes in and crawls round and round and round and pollinates it that way. If you ever had a fig Newton that's got the little tiny seed that sticks in your teeth, that means there's a bug in there doing that. But anyway, they produce figs on new growth as long as it comes off of last year's growth. So if you had to cut it back so far that all of last year's twigs were gone, it'll sprout back out, but it won't make figs. What I do with mine every winter is I thin out the tall stuff, but whatever grew the year before, I thaw it from the tip back to where it started growing, and I try to leave half of that. What sprouts off of that will have figs. It may still produce fruit. You might even want to go out. It's probably time, even up in Tennessee, to cut some of those new growth back a little bit and see if what sprouts off of it has enough time to make figs this year. It's just an experiment. Okay. But always leave at least half of the year. So when you prune it this next winter, leave half of 2023.
Gotcha. One more question. Are they supposed to be like, I guess I've only dealt with big trees. Are they supposed to be like canes? They're just like sprouts that come up, you know, off the root system, and they're just very unruly.
yeah, they're crazy. Yeah, they're crazy. What people who grow figs commercially, they grow the figs in the plants in long rows. They start them out by cutting off real close to the ground, which you did this year. This next winter. Right. If you want to go in and thin some of those out to where they're, you know, the ones that like a handful or more per plant, well-spaced ones, and then cut those about halfway back. And the next year, they'll branch out. And then the next year, you'll thin some of those out and cut. In other words, just keep thinning, and then whatever's left, cut it back a little bit. And that'll keep them kind of open and kind of tidy. But you don't want 15 sprouts when five or six will do.
Sounds great. Thank you, Felder. I really appreciate the information. Have a great day.
Okay, good luck on it. Appreciate it. And again, I appreciate it when I get stumped on stuff, people call up and help me out. That happens a lot on Mississippi Facebook. I know some of y'all are not social media people, but you can trust me on this. This is a safe site with nothing but gardeners, Mississippi Gardening Facebook. We have probably a dozen and a half professional horticulturists or related professionals who help people out with gardens, with their questions, with the product, insects, everything. So if you want to check it out, Mississippi Gardening on Facebook. Meanwhile, let's slide up to Itawamba County, Mississippi. Rebecca, what's going on in Fulton?
Oh, it's nice. It's actually 75 degrees here, which is amazing. We're enjoying it. We're enjoying it until tomorrow because it's supposed to be really bad hot tomorrow. But we're one of the few places. We actually got rain last week, and I'm like,
wow.
And I'm like, tree light got 6 inches of rain, and I'm like, oh my gracious, we were so grateful.
I wish, like on the internet, you could cut and paste some of that. Well, that's what rain barrels are. I guess they're sort of like folders for cutting and pasting rainfall. Anyway, what you got going on? What's up?
No, I mean, thank you so much for helping me. I was just curious about. I would like to start doing terrariums. I would like to do some terrariums because there's a place in Portland, Oregon that I saw online that has, you know, that teaches classes and does all this sort of stuff. And my cousin said she was going to help me with doing those. And but are they really hard to do?
No, they're really not. As a matter of fact, my friend Dr. John Guyton from Mississippi State, he used to have kids bring clear medicine bottles, you know, the little plastic filled bottles, and he would drill a hole in the top and put a little lanyard on it, and he'd have them do pocket terrariums, a little piece of moss, you know, a roly-poly, you know, stuff like that. You can actually have a little pocket terrarium with a clear medicine bottle. They were invented by a guy named Ward, W-A-R-D, who came up with the idea of a glass box to put on sailing ships. So when the British would go around the world, you know, doing stuff, they would bring plants back in these boxes that would protect them from the really harsh ocean conditions. And so that's the first greenhouses called, they were called Wardian cases. But really, the main thing is you want to make sure that you follow instructions on the soil type, so it doesn't stay soggy and wet and get stinky and, you know, that kind of stuff. So you use a different kind of soil. You have to be kind of careful what kind of plants you put in, because some get way, way too big. But you can have a desert terrarium that doesn't need a bunch of water, just any kind. All it is is a personalized little capsule with plants in, like in a spaceship.
Okay. Well, I just thought it was cool that you didn't have to water it and you didn't have to worry about whether it was going to die or not.
Well, you know, it's not going to live forever. You know, you can't send it to Mars and back. But you know, so the main thing is it is a miniature biome, I guess what it's called. So you know, you want to get it started right and choose plants that will do well there. So there's a lot of really good stuff online. Don't get confused about all the how to. Just keep it as simple as you can and expect some of it to not do well, but some of it's going to really thrill you.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Okay, Rebecca. Thanks for calling. I hope y'all get a little bit more rain. Save some for us.
Okay. Yes,
now,
sir.
Let's slide down to stomping grounds of the original Felders from the early 1800s. We're going down to Magnolia, which is the county seat of Pike County. What's up, Melissa?
Yeah, maybe Melissa will send in an email, because we're actually running on about 30 seconds left in the show, Felder. We kind of jumped the shark a little bit.
All righty. Well, just want to let her know, I've been to Magnolia. There used to be a guy there named the original rhinestone cowboy. He even had rhinestones on his teeth, and I met him one time. So, you know, it's just, as long as there's folks like that out there, Java, you and me are okay. We're well within the bell curve, is what I'm saying. So we got a lot of stuff we can talk about. I wish I could help you drag your hoses. I wish I was in my garden right now so I could drag hoses myself. Some plants are worth saving, but if it's getting the best of you, don't feel like you've got to give up all of your hope and your aspirations, your life and control, just to save some plants. Gardening is about picking up and moving on, about doing stuff for the future. If you get a chance this weekend, I know it's hot, but go to a garden center. Take a kid. They've got pansies. They're starting to get fall stuff in, and kales, and all sorts of cool stuff that can be planted in pots. Cluster up close to the house so you don't have to drag a hose too far, and get a start on this fall. Take a kid with you and show them how to do what we do best, folks, and that's get dirty. Go out and have you a cup of water and enjoy what we got. See you next week.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. To hear previous shows, visit mpbonline.org or download the MPB Public Radio app to listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand.